Well, good afternoon, and welcome once again to the Mike Wilson Show on WWGH. In the studio today, I have a friend of mine, Randy Winland, who is the current president of the Marion County Historical Society. He's not the he's a past president of the Marion County Historical Society. And Randy, it's good to have you here.
Well, thank you, Mike. Appreciate the opportunity.
We have a variety of things to talk about, and one of those is a book that you've recently published about Crystal Lake Park that was out on Route 4 north of Marion, and that's the first thing we're going to talk about. So I'll hand the mic over to you.
Well, thank you. As you mentioned, I did just recently publish a book on the history of the Crystal Lake Park. All of the proceeds from the sale of the book go to the Marion County Historical Society. All the royalties and, again, the proceeds go to the Historical Society. Crystal Lake was an amusement park that originally was a limestone quarry, and in 1922, it was leased by the YMCA to have an outdoor swimming area. And later that year, it was purchased by a group of local investors. And in 1925, they built an amusement park. At the time, the park cost $175,000, which in today's dollars, that would be $2.5 million.
Oh, wow.
So it was not a small operation. They put in a lot of money into developing it. They opened with numerous rides. They had a roller coaster that was 2,500 feet long. So if you think about that, that's about a half mile, almost a half mile long. It's what I call a hoop-de-doo roller coaster. It went up and down, and up and down, and up and down, straight out, made a 180-degree turn, then came back. That was one of their most popular rides. They had carousels. They had all kind of other rides, bump-em cars and a pony rides and so forth. They also built a huge dance pavilion, and then they also refurbished the quarry to be a swimming area. So it was a very, very popular entertainment. It started in 1925. It's kind of a sad story. Very shortly after the park opened with the roller coaster, two cousins from the Mansfield area were riding it, and the young man got thrown out and was killed. Apparently, they'd loosened their safety belts to get a little bit more of a thrill, and they went over the hoop-de-doos, and unfortunately, he was thrown out and killed, and his cousin, who was riding with him, was severely injured, although she did recover.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back a little bit further. I know, but would you explain the purpose of putting a park in Marion, Ohio, of all places?
Well, in the 1920s, amusement parks were very, very popular all across the nation. Ohio alone had 54 of them. And so the one in Marion was actually kind of a late comer. But the reason for one in Marion was basically an investment. It was to be a moneymaker. But it was put into a quarry, and it was put right on the interurban. The interurban was a rail system that crossed Ohio. They were single car, sort of like a street trolley, I guess you might say. They would travel. The one in Marion was known as the CDM, Columbus, Delaware, and Marion. Mm-hmm. They went from downtown Columbus up High Street, up through Worthington, and then came up along what's today Route 23, came into Prospect, crossed over to Prospect. They came up along Route 4 into Marion on the west side of Marion, came through Marion, then went up and out of Marion on Route 4, on up through by Bucyrus, and eventually over to Mansfield. You actually could ride the interurbans all the way from Cleveland to Cincinnati. It's interesting, a few years ago, there was a motion to have a light rail system built in Ohio. They were going to call the 3C rail, Columbus, Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati. Well, that existed back in the 1920s, just in a little bit of a different version. So some of the interurban companies would actually build theme parks, recreation parks, on their line as a way to get riders to use the interurban more on the weekends. A lot of the interurban was used by people that were going to work, and then on the weekends they didn't have much of a ridership. So some of the electric companies, as they were called, would build theme parks at the end of their line to encourage riders to go there. Now, Crystal Lake was not built by the interurban, but it did go right in front of it, and a lot of the people that visited Crystal Lake did use the interurban to get there.
So there were several, not far from Marion, like the one up in Crawford County. There were several parks along the interurban, from what I understand.
Right. That's correct. There was one between Galley and Bucyrus, it was called Sakium. There was one in a couple in Findlay. There was one in Mansfield. There were two or three down in the Columbus area. So they were around this in a variety of areas, over in Kenton, at Indian Lake, Findlay. I don't know if I mentioned Findlay or not, but there were several of them within a 40 or 50 mile drive. But back in those days, 40 or 50 miles was quite a ways. It wasn't something like today. We hop in a car and drive 100 miles and don't think a whole lot about it many times. But back in the 19-teens and the 1920s, driving 40 or 50 miles was quite an accomplishment.
And the grand opening day was May 29th of 1925. Is that correct?
I believe. I don't have it right in front of me. I have it in front of me. You do. So, you're looking at it. So.
Yes, that is correct. Now, over the early years of Crystal Lake, they did have some controversy in the community, I believe.
Yeah, one of the things they had, a couple of different things, but one was a lot of the local churches did not want them to be open on Sundays. There was a large contingent of churches in Marion, including some of the very powerful, larger churches that ended up taking them to court over it. It was a protracted legal battle. And some of the churches just did not want dancing on Sundays. Some did not want them even to be open on Sundays. And it kind of went back and forth. One of the local judges at first ruled that they could be open on Sunday, and then about a year later he reversed his order. Then eventually legislation across the state allowed the parks to be open on Sundays. But it kind of became a bit of a moot point because when the Depression hit, many of the parks closed at any rate, and that certainly had an impact on Crystal Lake as well.
Okay, they opened 1925. Of course, the Great Depression hit in October of 1929, I believe.
Correct.
And so they had a good 4 years, mm-hmm. and then things went downhill for a while.
Yeah, quite well. They people could not afford to go and have that kind of disposable income. Now, the park did stay open. In fact, it stayed open in one form or the other until 1958. But it stayed open after the Depression years primarily as a dance hall that eventually became a roller rink for roller skating and the swimming area. There were a few rides here and there, but the majority of the large rides, the carousel, the roller coaster, some of the other rides, the Love Tunnel, the boat rides and things like that, they were all taken out by 1930-31. We don't have exact records on what happened to them. When I was doing the research on this, I had to rely very heavily on what I could find in the Marion Star, because there was no other source to go to. I did find some things in some advertising magazines, but to the best of our knowledge, most of the rides were taken down by 1932. The carousel, we believe with 95% accuracy that it is still being used in Burlington, North Carolina. We do know that the organ from it is at Hershey Park in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
And is being used there. We do have documentation of that. The carousel that went to Burlington they purchased it from a gentleman in Oak Harbor, Ohio, who we believe purchased the Crystal Lake carousel. And the timing is such. And the people in Burlington, their parks department, say they believe it is one from Crystal Lake. But we're just not willing to say 100%. There's no serial number or anything like that mm-hmm. that we can say that absolutely it is. If it is that one, it's very interesting because now it's back in Marion because it actually is being refurbished at a company here in Marion that refurbishes carousels. So the one from Burlington is actually perhaps back home for a year or so.
Okay. And back to the controversies, I believe there was quite a stir in town about the revealing swimsuits being worn outside of the swimming area.
Yeah, that's exactly the some of the people in Marion, and again, primarily the churches, did not, and then the city council, the city prosecutor, did not think it was appropriate for the young men and the young women to wear their bathing suits downtown when they were not out at the park. They said at the park it was fine, but they just didn't feel that it should be something they should be walking around the streets on. And so there was legislation that was proposed to ban that, and then the city prosecutor said there's better things for our city council to be doing than worrying about swimsuits. But it was interesting. There was a survey done of several people. The Marion Star did a survey, and very, very few of them that were surveyed had any problem with them wearing the bathing suits. And in fact, some said they didn't even see, had never even seen somebody in one, and they had looked very strenuously to try to find somebody, and never been able to find anybody.
And I think it's interesting that they were, your title of this one portion of the book says, Girls Roll Them Up Above the Knees.
Yeah. That was about the hose. They, the dance pavilion had, I don't know, in enforcers, maybe floor marshals that would be out on the dance floor to make sure that the people were dancing the way they were supposed to and dressed the way they were supposed to. And sometimes the girls apparently like to roll their hose down below their knees. I'm not quite sure why, but apparently it was a bit of a fad. And the job of the floor marshals to make sure that they were rolled up high enough that their knees were not being exposed. It's interesting, there were a couple different versions of when people would dance as far as how they would pay. There was the social plan, the park plan. One of those, you would pay an amount to get into the pavilion, the dance pavilion. You could dance all night long, and then the other one, you had to pay by the dance. You could go in and listen to the music, then you had to pay by the dance. When they had the bigger bands, the Guy Lombardo bands and ones like that, they used a social plan, which meant you had to pay to go in the door. It didn't matter if you danced or not, you were going to pay when you went in the door. The park plan allowed you to go in and just pay each dance. They would clear the floor after each dance, and you would go back out on the floor, and you'd pay your nickel or your dime or whatever it might be able to dance.
There were some big names that came to Marion to come to Crystal Lake, such as Guy Lombardo, I believe I saw in here, right. and other big names right. of the time.
It was a circuit of bands that went across the country, and Crystal Lake got on that circuit. A lot of them were recording bands. They were put out by the studios, NBC Studios or Columbia Records. They had what they called their recording orchestras, their recording bands that would play in the background or play for a lot of the recordings that were done by the various artists, and they would go out on tour themselves.
Okay, and we had talked earlier about the tragedy that first year with the two cousins.
Yes.
And I'm looking at the book as we speak. In January of 1926, the Zip Operating Company, preparing to defend itself in a lawsuit arising from the tragedy that took place on a coaster the previous year, Mary, the young lady, the rider who had suffered serious injuries in the event, was suing for $50,000 or more than $718,000 in today's dollars, alleging negligence on the part of the operating company. Wasn't it their fault because they undid their safety belts?
Well, Nate, there was no way to prove that's what happened. If at the top of the first hill, there actually was an operator stationed there. Then when the car would go up the first hill, there were all kind of signs. There was a sign in each car, do not loosen your belts. There was an operator that was at the top of the hill when the car went up over, would make sure that the belts were tightened, were fastened tightly. But apparently, as in anything, youngsters don't always want to follow their instructions. And,
right.
And apparently it was loosened enough. They never had any other trouble with people being thrown out. So apparently it was what happened. The witnesses in the car behind them said they had seen the people loosen their safety belts. And so there's no way to prove it, but that was what the assumption was.
Okay.
Another interesting thing on the roller coaster, one of the stories I like is that about a couple years after it opened, when it came back into the station house or back into the place where people would get on and off, there was a gentleman just holding his hand over his eye and just, you know, could not, people knew what was going on. And it turned out he had a glass eye. And when he had gone over one of the hills, the glass eye had popped out of his eye socket, and they couldn't find it. And eventually they hunted around and found it in the bottom of the car. And the story goes, the article in the newspaper said that he cleaned it off and popped it back in and went on his merry way.
Oh, those were the days, huh?
Yep. I see you looking at the map of the park. That was one of the things that we've never been able to find an exact layout of the park. Now, we have a lot of photos, especially Mike and Linda Perry have a tremendous photo collection of Marion. They had a lot of photos of Crystal Lake. I have some other people have, the Historical Society has some. So we were able to use those photos and descriptions from the Marion Star to get a general idea of where things were laid out at. And so I have a friend of mine who is a cartographer, a map maker, Bill Watts, and he actually took those photos, those descriptions, and made a concept map to show how the park was laid out. Supposedly there does exist a map of where it actually was. I've never seen it. I've never been able to find it. So we were very thrilled when Bill put that together. It does give kind of a feel for where things were at and how it was laid out.
I think it's interesting here that the Dick Brunn Company, is that Brunn or Brune? It's two N's.
I don't know how they pronounce it.
Whichever it is, had a plowing demonstration at the park.
Right.
That's kind of different from the other activities.
And what was really interesting about that is Dick had committed suicide at Crystal Lake about a year before that.
Oh.
He was a local car dealer, I believe Ford. I'd have to go back and check my notes, but he was a local car dealer. and he had gone out to the park and had committed suicide. Over the years, there were several suicides. I don't know how many exactly, but I remember at least four or five that I wrote about, as well as a couple of accidental drownings. A young 13-year-old boy drowned. One of the mysteries, an 18-year-old young man committed suicide, they believe, but they couldn't find his body. And he was in late fall, and they never found his body until the following spring. And so there was always questions about, well, did he really commit suicide, or did he try to fake it so that somebody thought he had, because normally they would be able to find the body, but in this case they weren't for several months. But eventually they did.
Yeah, I think I was reading about that earlier, and they felt that he hadn't drowned, but that he had, from the shock of the cold water, that killed him before he had a chance to drown, actually, which is interesting. Lots of things. I mean, that was a big deal, that amusement park.
Right.
And having family around this area myself at that time, I probably had family that went there.
Right. I've met some people during, as part of my research, that had gone there in the very late years when it was roller skating. It stayed open until 1958 as a roller skating / dance pavilion. It would kind of go back and forth. Around 1930, they did had wrestling and boxing matches. One of the big things they did that I found interesting were the dance marathons.
Oh, yes.
They had dance marathons that went on for literally months at times. And then once those kind of went out of favor, then they had walkathons, and so they would go with those. But they had auto dealer shows, and they continued to be popular. Even in 1936, right in the midst of the Depression, one weekend they had over 6,000 people there just to do the dancing and swimming and so forth. Night swimming became very popular. They put up lights, and so swimming at nighttime became very popular. And so it was able to stay open as a park in one form or the other, as I mentioned, until 1958. They actually had a ice skating park there for a couple of years. I had never heard of that, but the North Pole ice skating rink was set up just south of the dance pavilion where the roller coaster would have been. That was back around 1940, 1941.
Mm-hmm.
There also were the first lighted softball fields in the area. Lincoln Park had some lighted fields. They really weren't set up to play full games at night, and so the fellow named Harold Smitty came in, had a bar uptown, and set several softball teams and baseball teams. So he came in and put up lights, and they actually had lighted softball fields and baseball fields for a couple of years. Eventually those lights were taken down and went out to Garfield Park, and along with the bleachers, he had bleachers that could seat 600 people, which was really pretty good sized bleachers for an outdoor park for a softball game. And so he took those out to Garfield Park, and that's when Garfield Park became kind of the softball central area of Marion for quite a few years.
One name that shows up quite often throughout the book was Uncle Addy. Would you like to discuss him and his part in the park?
Well, Addison Bain was in charge of children's recreation. They really tried to attract families, and so he had a lot of activities that he would do with children. He had different parties, and one of the things they had was a Just Kids Day with the Marion Star. They set up a promotion that kids would sign a safety pledge, that they would watch neighbor crossing the streets and be safe, and if they did that, they would get a pin button they could put on. And if they came to the park on a certain day, they would have free rides, free refreshments. And the first time they had it, there were over 6,000 kids came through for that day. And then Bain was well known in the Marion area for a variety of other things. He was a local businessman. And throughout the years, he was quite a major role in trying to get young people to come to the park.
And one thing he set up was the Just Kids Safety Club, which you just talked about.
Right.
And that sounds like that was fairly popular with our young folks in the Marion area,
right?
Which those folks now be in their, what, 80s, 90s, beyond that.
Yes, right.
So it's been a while ago. And these pictures that I look at, I mean, it looks like there are hundreds, maybe thousands of people on the park in some of these pictures.
Right.
And once again, this book is available at the Marion County Historical Society, the Heritage Hall, which you can they're closed for, well, they're still open, aren't they, on the weekends?
Right now we're open on the weekends, okay. One more weekend, next Saturday and Sunday, the 14th and the 15th, from 1 to 4. The office is open during the week, and if you were to call the office, you know, you certainly could be let in to buy one of the books. But they also are available at Carroll's Jewelers.
Okay.
And they are available at Andrew's Pastries, at Books on Center, and the Convention and Visitors Bureau on the east end of town, and also from the Historical Society website at marionhistory.com. So there's a lot of different ways that people can purchase them. They cost $25.99 plus tax. Again, 100% of the proceeds do go to the Marion County Historical Society, and it's a good fundraiser for us. It's a good way to preserve the history of something that was unique to our city. A lot of people have just heard of, as I was starting my research, I spent probably the better part of a year just researching this, and as I would talk to people, well, I've heard of that, but I really don't know much about it. What they do remember is the old Bargain City building.
Mm-hmm.
That was built from the roller skating rink or the dance pavilion, and that became the first Bargain City in Marion. And it was interesting, the Bargain City was formed by two gentlemen down in the Cincinnati area. And they named the first one Rink's Bargain City because they had set it up in a roller skating rink.
Okay, I always wondered about
that. That's where the Rink's came from. And
okay.
Eventually they shortened it to just Bargain City and so forth. But it was really quite a place. And they built the one next door to it, the block building still stands. And then the old building, the old roller skating rink, dance pavilion, burned to the ground in 1975. And that really was the last remnant of Crystal Lake. A gentleman and his wife live there now. They divided the property into two parts. The southern part is where the new Bargain City building was built, and that was now used by a manufacturing company. And then the northern part, where the lake actually is and where most of the park was at, is a private residence and so forth. And there's really not very little remnants of what was once there. I was able to go out a few weeks ago and take a tour around, and you can see maybe a concrete structure that might have been a base of a ride or something, mm-hmm. but really there was very, very little. As you can see, the swimming area was interesting. They had two different pools, plus the main quarry area to swim in. They had a shallow pool and then a medium pool that were actually built out of concrete, and they had water would flow in from the lake. It was all natural spring-fed water. And they would go into the swimming pool, and then it would go down into the second pool. And when it went down in the second pool, they had multicolored lights that would shine at night. They had big fountains. They had diving areas, diving pavilions, sliding boards went down. And it was really a very, very popular swimming area. And I did talk to several people that could remember swimming there, and talked to a few that remember swimming there when they really maybe shouldn't have been swimming there.
Yeah.
But certainly people remember having roller skated there.
Now, one thing, this really... Another thing's in your book, it's really not at the park, but a famous flagpole setter.
What's
Betty
her Fox.
Name? Fly. Yes, Betty Fox, yes.
Right. A lot of things in the 1920s, 1930s, they were the era of fads. I mean, there was all kind of things going on. I mentioned about the dance marathons and so forth. Well, Betty Fox was a, according to her advertisement, a world champion flagpole setter. Now, I'm not quite sure how she got the designation of world champion because she did not sit on the pole nearly as long as some other people I read about, but she came to Marion and they mounted I believe it was 50-foot tall flagpole on top of the Harding Hotel. So the Harding Hotel, I believe, is 8 stories tall. So that would make it about 80 feet, put another 50 feet of a flagpole on top of that. So you're about 130 feet off the ground. And her platform is 12 inches square. Mm-hmm. And she sat on top of that platform for 100 hours. They ran a telephone line up to her. They had a hoist to take her meals up and down and so forth to her. I mentioned in my presentation a few weeks ago at Tri-Rivers, I'm not quite sure how she handled her personal needs in 100 hours, but that was never talked about in the Marion Star, so that'll remain a mystery, I guess. But it was interesting because at the same time that she was in town, there was a set of Siamese twins, two male men Siamese twins that came to Marion. They were performing in one of the local theaters. And one of the photos in the book that I really like is Betty Fox and the Gordino twins shaking hands, because supposedly it was good luck if you shook hands with Siamese twins. And one of the stories I enjoyed about them is that one time one of them was driving. I forget which one it was. They had a specially rigged automobile so that they could both drive. I don't know if the steering wheel slid over. I'm not sure exactly how it worked, but somehow they both could drive. Well, the one was apparently not paying too close attention and ran into a cart and was charged with a reckless operation. And when he went to court, the judge was going to sentence him to 3 days in jail. But the other twin said, well, wait a minute, that's false imprisonment. I can't go to jail. I didn't do anything wrong. So how can you imprison me? And the judge was like, well, now what do I do? And so he did not sentence them to jail, but did take away their driving license.
And I like how Coca-Cola took advantage of the situation with Mary Fox. They ran an ad. Miss Mary Fox drinks Coca-Cola as an aid in maintaining her stamina and endurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's one of the things nice, I was talking with you off air, that I self-published this book. I did not go through an actual publishing company as I have on some of the other books I've written, because this was allowing me to go down the rabbit hole, as I call it, to have little stories in there just about things like that, about the Gradino twins and about other activities that many publishing companies would not have let me do. So there was a story in there about Marion's contingent in the Spanish-American War having a reunion out at Crystal Lake. And it was just things like that. The first chapter talks primarily about quarrying in the limestone industry in Marion County, mm-hmm. and why there came to be a Crystal Lake lake to start with. And so we were able to do some things like that. I think people that would read the book would hopefully find it interesting in terms of some of the other information just besides the actual park itself. There's well over 200 pictures in the book. It's a full format size book. It's 150 pages long. So there's a lot of information in there that I hope people would enjoy if they were to get one. It makes a great Christmas present for that hard to buy for a person. Mm-hmm. My parents are not from Marion. I'm not from the area, but they took it down and showed it to some of their friends, and a couple of them even bought it because they just thought it was an interesting read. So that pleased me, and I would hope some of the people in the Marion area that have not gotten the book might get one and support the Historical Society. Speaking of which, if I could switch gears just for a second.
Yes, let's switch gears.
I am part of the Marion County Historical Society. As you mentioned before, I've been past president on a few occasions. And I'm so proud of our organization. We've worked very, very hard to collect, preserve, and share the history of Marion County. And I know you've been involved with us and have been a reenactor for us and mm-hmm. have volunteered in many different ways and so forth. Right now, we are having our membership campaign. I really would like to encourage people to consider becoming members of the Marion County Historical Society. Your membership dues help us keep our doors open, help us be able to present programs for free. The program we did on Crystal Lake, for example, we had over 200 people there that night, and I was so pleased with that, but there was no charge for admission. We do that as a free program to say thank you to the people of Marion County. We do two or three programs like this a year. So if you would consider becoming a member of the Marion County Historical Society, our dues are very reasonable. They're $10 for a student or $35 for an individual, $50 for a family, or $100 for a contributor. We also have some special projects going on right now. Many of the listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with Mary Ellen Withrow, who was
sure.
the U.S. Treasurer.
She's on the station quite often.
Okay, well, Mary Ellen is a treasurer, and we are so pleased that she has chosen the Historical Society to be the repository of her museum. When she decides to close her museum down, she has now at Primrose. She's going to be passing out us on to us to preserve and share. We also are doing a video history of Mary Ellen that will have to preserve her memories, that will talk about these different items. So we do have a special fundraising now. We were able to get a grant, but it's a matching grant. So for every dollar we get from the grant, we have to raise a dollar. So we're soliciting monies for that. We also have another grant from the High Arts Council called the Marion Voices. It's an oral history project. It's going to be collecting oral histories, video histories of people in the Marion area. Also, Lynn Schoolhouse. I'm sure many people are aware that Lynn Schoolhouse suffered an accident a few months back. A truck ran into the schoolhouse and knocked a big hunk out of it. Thank goodness the driver was not injured. And the building is going to be refurbished, and we hope to have it open in the spring. But we are soliciting funds to help with that project. So, you know, if you do have a little bit of money that you could help with the Historical Society, we'd be very much appreciative of it, either becoming a member or making a pledge or a donation or doing both. The Marion County Historical Society, we have a webpage at marionhistory.com, or we are open on the corner of State and Church Streets from 9 to 4, Monday through Friday, or they can call 740-387-4255 to find out more about our programs, what we're going to be doing. And then one other thing I'd like to talk a little bit about, if I may, is the upcoming Marion County Bicentennial.
Certainly.
2020 will be the 200th anniversary of the founding of Marion County. Marion County was created in 1820. And 2 years later, Marion City was platted in 1822. So we're going to be celebrating the 200th birthday of Marion County. We've had several celebrations over the year, and in 1897, there was the 75th anniversary of the city. In 1922, there was another anniversary. In 1972, there was a Sesqui Centennial celebration. But in 2020, there's a lot of things coming up. In addition to the Marion County Bicentennial, that's also the 100th anniversary of the election of Warren G. Harding as president. It's going to be the opening of the Harding Presidential Library and how fortunate we are to have that coming to Marion. It's also going to be the opening of the renovated Harding Home. Marion Technical College will celebrate its 50th anniversary in 2020. The Ohio State University at Marion will be celebrating the main campus's 150th anniversary with local celebrations. Marion General Hospital will celebrate its 100th anniversary. The Women's Club Home on East Center Street is celebrating, I think it's their 125th maybe, I'm not sure the exact number, anniversary. So there's a lot of things going on in Marion. A steering committee was formed to help celebrate the county bicentennial. And we have taken on the theme that we're going to be looking at it as a homecoming celebration. Instead of having just one large celebration like we've done perhaps in the other years, we're going to be celebrating our communities, Homecoming 2020. So we have a steering committee and a planning committee. The steering committee is comprised of representatives from different groups in Marion. The planning committee is comprised of representatives from the various villages and communities and some other entities like the Huber Machinery Museum. So starting in January, we're going to have a series of events that go entirely throughout 2020. One of the ones I'm really excited about is we're going to have what we call Marion 200. We're going to have a series of presentations on the history of different aspects of Marion County. So, for example, on January 16th, we're going to have Brad Lupper, who is the chief archaeologist for the state of Ohio, the Ohio History Connection. He's going to be talking about what was Marion County before it was Marion County. Then we're going to have a presentation on a farmer's life, the history of agriculture in Marion County. And we're looking to do these to tell a story of how things evolved over 200 years. We're not going to be talking so much about this happened on this date at this location, but if you were a farmer in 1820, 1840, 1880, 1900, and so forth, how did your life change until up till 2020? We're going to be doing that for farming, education, religion, entertainment, business, industry, sports and recreation, politics. There's a variety of these that are going to be held throughout the year, and all these will be free to the general public. We're also going to be having a variety of celebrations. For example, the Huber Museum is going to be having a homecoming celebration. Many of our villages are going to be having them. Caledonia, Prospect, Martell, New Bloomington, Morrill, Prospect, Waldo. We'll all be having celebrations throughout the year. We also are going to be having what we call some legacy projects, which are projects designed to leave a lasting impact on the area once we're done with the year. One of these is going to be digitization days. We received a grant from the Marion Community Foundation to purchase laptop computers and scanners. So we're going to be going around the locations throughout the county and inviting people to bring in old photographs or letters or diaries from their relatives or from their own. And we will scan some of those for them and put it on a USB drive and give that to them so that they can then take that home. And we also will then have a copy of it for the Historical Society. Again, that'll be done at no charge. We're going to be having another project called Capture the Living Past. We're going to be doing first-person oral histories with what I call everyday people. The man that worked at the Marion Power Shovel and his wife who stayed home and raised five kids because she could afford to on the wage he made. The person that was a teacher and then went from a consolidation to a large school system. To just any type of person, just what I call, again, the everyday people. Those are stories that don't get told. The stories of the rich and the famous, so to speak, they are preserved. But the story of the everyday man and the everyday woman often don't get preserved, yet those are the ones that we need to have preserved. So this Capture Living Past, we'll attempt to do some of that. Speaking of that, at the Historical Society, we have a large collection of artifacts, but interestingly enough, the things that we don't have much of are things from the 1950s and 1960s to the present. We have a lot of stuff from 1870, 1880, 1900, but we don't have things that are more modern because people don't think of that as historical. I took my VHS camera in a few weeks ago and a VHS player. You know, my grandkids had no idea what that was. I was trying to show them a VHS tape of their mother when she was in the Harding Marching Band. They had no clue what that was. So those are things we also need, things from the 50s, 60s, up through the present, to add to our collection. And so these Capture Living Past, we'll be doing that. I also mentioned about the speaker series and the last legacy project we're hoping to do, if we can get the funding for it, is called The Story of Us, where we hope to hire a professional videographer to go to all of the events throughout the year and video the events, and then take part of that and put it into a compilation video.
Oh, okay.
So at the end of the year, there would be a video that would have snippets of everything that went on during the year. Instead of writing a book or trying to preserve it in that way, it actually would be done in a video. That's going to be an expensive project, and we are in the middle of fundraising for that right now. We're going to have some other things, and those are the big projects. We're going to have a time capsule. Tri-Rivers Career Center is going to build a time capsule that we will be putting at the Marion County office building to preserve the archives from this year. We're going to have a music trail. We're going to have Nickelodeons set up throughout downtown Marion in different stores. People can go in and play an actual Nickelodeon.
Oh, really?
And they'll have like a little map, and they get stamped, and they go in there, they'll have it stamped. And we're going to do that in conjunction with Marysville, who's also celebrating their 200th anniversary this year. We're going to have some Bicentennial Bites food specials. We want the restaurants to come up with different things to advertise and rotate that all around throughout the county. So this week,
okay.
This restaurant will have the Bicentennial Bites. Next week, another restaurant will. We're going to have wearables. We're going to have clothing. We're going to have hopefully some collectible coins. We're going to have what I'm excited about is Bicentennial Moments and Memories. I'm currently writing a little snippet about something that happened in Marion County every day for 365 days. Now, it won't necessarily be that it happened on that day, but every day we're going to share something on the radio and in the newspapers and on our Facebook and web pages about here's something that happened in Marion County in the last 200 years. And we're going to try to tie it into the subjects that are coming up. So, for example, when Waldo is having his celebration, for about 2 weeks before that, we'll have snippets about Waldo. When the Harding Presidential Site's getting ready to do their grand opening, for about 2 weeks before that, we'll have snippets about Harding and his life and so forth. So a lot of things going on. I'm very, very excited about it. I'm serving as chair of the celebration. I've got a great steering committee and a planning committee I'm working with, and pretty excited about it.
Yeah, a lot going on this upcoming year. Of course, as you mentioned earlier, this will be the 100th anniversary of the election of a Warren G. Harding as president, and that was the first election that the women got to vote in, which is quite interesting. So that's another milestone we'll be celebrating. And incidentally, my birthday falls on August 26th, which is Women's Suffrage Day. So I presume that's the day that they won the fight to vote.
Either they won it, or that's when the legislation became effective. I don't know which way it was, but I'm sure it was involved with that, yes.
Yes, I'm sure it was. So a lot going on with the 200th anniversary of Marion and Marion, Marion County as well. Let's see, what else can we talk about, Randy? We have about 5-8 minutes.
Well, if you have questions for me, I can try to answer them. I pretty well pretty well covered what I came to share. But
you did cover quite a bit. You've covered quite a bit in the last half an hour or so.
I will mention perhaps some of the Marion 200 speakers that we're going to be having. And the dates for these will soon be coming up on the Marion County Bicentennial Facebook page and also on the web page. The web page will be accessed from the Marion County Historical Society web page as an addition to that. But I mentioned before, on January 16th, Dr. Brad Lepper, who is a curator of archaeology for the Ohio Historical Connection, which used to be the Ohio Historical Society. I have a hard time not calling it the Ohio Historical Society. But anyway, he's going to be talking about Before It Was Marion. That will be at Tri-Rivers Career Center in the auditorium. On February 27th, Mike Brewer, who is a seventh-generation farmer in Marion County, is going to be talking about a farmer's life, what it was like to be a farmer throughout 200 years. And again, that will be at Tri-Rivers also. On March 12th, Jim Craycraft, who is a superintendent in several districts in the area, will be talking about reading, writing, and arithmetic, the three R's, and about how education has evolved over the years. On April 19th, Doug Ford, Chaplain Doug Ford, who is a local minister, will be talking about Praise Be. That will be the history of religion in Marion County, and we're not quite sure where that's going to be at yet. We're still looking at some different locations. And 2 weeks later, his wife, Bev Ford, we'll be talking about The Show Must Go On, and she's going to be talking about the history of entertainment in Marion County. That one will be held at the Palace Theater, and as part of that, there's going to be a behind-the-scenes tour of the Palace. People have never been able to see.
Ooh, that's fascinating. I've been back there.
So that's going to be, we're real excited about that. On May 7th, Lars Olson is going to talk about the business of business. And again, we're talking about these things. We're not just looking at Marion City. So the business of business We're going to be talking about what went on in the villages and how things happened and so forth. That's going to be held at the Marion Public Library in their meeting room. On May 21st, Dave Claiborne will talk about the original Marion Maid, which will be industry. And again, we're going to be looking at industry in other areas. I find some of the little villages fascinating when it comes to their industry. For example, Prospect had a fire engine company that later they had a jet-powered or water-powered boats that they used to build firefighting boats out of. And I joke about the jet skis were founded in Prospect. There was a company called the Hanley Fire Engine Company that had made fire engines in Prospect. And they had a problem in that a lot of times towns were located on bodies of water, like rivers, like Marietta, Wheeling, Cincinnati. If they had significant flooding, there would be fires, but the fire engines couldn't get to them because the building was surrounded by water. So here's the irony: a building surrounded by water is burning. So what Keenan Hanley did, he was an engineer at the fire company, he put a pump in the bottom of a boat, stuck a hose out one side of the pump with a filter on it to suck water in, then put a fire nozzle on another hose and blew water out the other side to steer the boat, kind of like a jet ski. And they would steer this boat to where the fire was at, and then they would use the fire hose to put the fire out.
Oh, wow.
So that was, I believe, the invention of the jet boat, at least one of the very early versions of it.
Mm-hmm.
They later went on to build the firefighting boats. They're somewhat famous. You see them in New York City with the big fire things going out. They also invented boats that were used in Korea and in Vietnam, in some of the areas. So that's the industry. On June 11th, Brett McQuarrie is going to talk about his The Doctor In, which is a medical history of Marion County. Again, I mentioned earlier, it's Marion General Hospital's 100th anniversary. On October 8th, Dave Gornflow is going to talk about play ball, which is going to be sports in Marion County. Dave is a sports aficionado and a historian in that area. And on October 22nd, Brett McQuarrie will be speaking again on politics and personalities. We'll be talking about some of the politicians in Marion's history and some of the unique personalities. And finally, on November 12th, we'll wrap it up. It's been a very good year. We'll have the sealing of the time capsule, and that'll take place at the county office building. So those are just some of the speaker events we're going to be having during the year. I also mentioned about the digitization days, which are the scanning, the oral histories, the video histories. And so there's a lot going on. Again, if you need a Christmas present, a membership to the Marion County Historical Society would make a great Christmas present. If you could donate to some of our projects that are going on and some of our we're trying to accomplish some things, or perhaps purchase a copy of the book for Crystal Lake. They're $25.99 plus tax, and those are available at Carol Jewelers, Andrew's Pastries, Books on Center, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, at Heritage Hall, and also at MarionHistory.com.
And they are $24.99 plus tax?
$25.99
plus tax, okay. I bought mine today, by the way.
Well, thank you.
I did see your presentation a few weeks ago, and I was fascinated. I had heard of Crystal Lake, but I didn't know what all had gone on there and what a big attraction it was to people from, well, let's say from far and wide.
Right.
And a lot of those came, of course, on the interurban to enjoy the rides and dancing and things, swimming. I guess the first year that Crystal Lake opened, swimming was a big thing because it was an extremely hot year. Is that correct?
Exactly. That's all that was available the first couple of years was the swimming. And you mentioned about coming to my presentation, which I appreciate that. I will just mention that if there are clubs or organizations or groups that would like to have a presentation on the history of Crystal Lake, I am available to do those. You can contact the Marion County Historical Society, and they can tell you how to get a hold of me. But I do go around and give presentations to different groups. We do ask for a minimum gratuity for that. The money will go to the Historical Society. So if there's anybody that's interested in having a presentation on Crystal Lake or a variety of other topics, please contact the Marion County Historical Society at 740-387-4255. Or they can get a hold of you, Mike, and you know how to get a hold of me also.
Oh, most certainly. I most certainly can. And you can contact me here at the station, and if I don't happen to be here, they know how to get a hold of me. So there are several ways to get a hold of Randy. And if you get a chance, like you said, if you do have a group that would like to hear his presentation, it is well worth it, people. It was just, I was riveted to my seat that night. So,
Thank you.
Very, very good presentation. Of course, we talked about Bargain City, and I'm looking back here at an ad from 1953. At that time, they called it the Crystal Lake Bargain Center,
right,
before Bargain City was actually in existence.
And it actually opened up a couple times. They had an outdoor tent in the summer, and then they would move stuff inside for the winter, and they would put it back outside in a tent. And it was kind of as a general transitional period for about 2 or 3 or 4 years before it actually was purchased and made officially into a bargain city.
Okay. And Randy, thank you so much for being a guest here today. We covered several topics. Again, the Crystal Lake Park book by Randy Wendland is available at several locations. Be listening again next Monday at 5:15 to The Mike Wilson Show on WWGH.